for those of you who don't hunt, you will certainly learn something. I know I sure did. But first up, we are going to do recalls, and that's with David and Bryce, and then we'll move into our program on hunting.
Hey, Bryce, you want to read the list of recalls?
Sure.
Well, we've got Kellogg's Mini Wheats.
Cereal.
Metal Fragments.
That's odd.
Yeah, wouldn't want to eat that. Earthbound Farm.
Salad Kit.
Salmonella. Kraft.
Jalapeno variety of string cheese.
Thin layer of plastic film from the package may remain adhered to the string cheese, which could cause a choking hazard. Sunridge.
Peanut butter products.
Salmonella. Fresh Pack Energy Club.
Peanuts.
Salmonella. Justin's.
Peanut butter products.
Salmonella. PureFit.
Peanut butter bars.
Salmonella. Exan Confections.
Gourmet peanut butter chocolate products.
Salmonella. Whole Foods Market.
Chicken spring rolls and peanut sesame noodles.
Salmonella. Whole Foods.
Peanut butter power chews and treasure trove mix.
Salmonella. Jer's.
Peanut butter bars.
Salmonella. Sunland, Trader Joe's, Archer Farms and more.
Almond butter and peanut butter.
Salmonella. Goodies by a tour.
Christmas. Don't tell me. Salmonella.
Undeclared peanuts.
Hey, Bungalow Bill, what did you kill? Bungalow Bill. Hey, Bungalow Bill, what did you kill? Bungalow Bill.
He went out tiger hunting with his elephant and gun. In case of accidents, he always took his mom. He's the all-American bullet-headed Saxon mother's son.
All the children sing.
Hey, Bungalow Bill, what did you kill? Bungalow Bill. Hey, Bungalow Bill, what did you kill? Bungalow Bill.
Deep in the jungle,
Captain Marvel zapped him right between the eyes.
All the children sing.
Hey, Bungalow Bill, what did you kill? Bungalow Bill. Hey, Bungalow Bill, what did you kill? Bungalow Bill.
The children asked him if to kill was not a sin. His mommy betted him.
If looks could kill, it would have been us instead of him.
All the children sing.
Hey, Bungalow Bill, what did you kill? Bungalow Bill. Hey, Bungalow Bill, was it your kill?
Okay, talking with Tiki Fernandez, an avid hunter and a caretaker at a local estate. Tiki grew up around here and lives around here being our listening area. And I've done a lot of shows about foraging. I've done shows about gardening. I've done shows about farming. But I guess one of the most basic primal pursuits of humanity, besides foraging, is hunting. So I thought I would speak with Tiki about his pursuit and his joy and his bloody hobby of hunting. So, Tiki, welcome to Foraging Ahead.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you for having me here. I started hunting probably when I was 16 or 17. And I got into it, I think, because my friends did it. And they said how much fun it was and how great it was and what I was missing out on.
How did they sell you on the hunting? I mean, you grew up son of immigrants.
Yes. No one. Well, originally...
Your family, I don't imagine, were hunters.
No, well, at some point they all tried to get into it because it was a good way to... I feel like people do it now. It's a good way to get meat that's good, healthy meat, and it's kind of inexpensive.
Is it?
And that's how they started doing it, but being Cuban, they didn't really like the cold aspect of sitting in the cold for hours waiting for deer, so it didn't last but one season. So actually, the first time I went hunting, I went by myself.
Oh, really?
In my parents' backyard, there was a big swamp. I went back there.
With what?
With a shotgun.
A shotgun?
A Mossberg 500 shotgun.
Okay.
Yes. And I was ready to roll.
And that for deer?
That's for deer, yeah. It's a common implement, shotgun. So that was my first tool.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not successful.
Had you shot guns? Were you familiar?
I have guns.
I mean,
I was familiar with the operation of guns.
Guns is a big obstacle to hunting
safety,
for me.
Safety is always paramount. That's right. The most important thing.
So you had shot guns.
I had shot guns before, and you have to take a hunter safety training course in order to get your license. So you have to be proficient in their use and know how to use them.
And what kinds of guns are they? I mean, that would you use for deer hunting?
Well, in Dutchess County, it's a shotgun-only county, so you can only use a shotgun.
How about Columbia County?
Columbia County is a rifle.
Oh, you could use a rifle?
Yes.
And Greene County, I heard you could use, like, grenade launchers.
Probably.
Yeah. RPGs.
The further you get out, you know, less population, you get to use better weapons.
So you knew how to shoot a gun?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And for those of you who don't know, for my listening audience who doesn't know, Explain to my mother what's the difference between a shotgun and a rifle.
I guess it would have to be the distance that the bullet travels. A shotgun is a short distance. When I was hunting, it was commonly said that, 100 yards and under was the effective killing range for a shotgun. Now I think with, modern bullets, they go farther. But, generally 100 yards is reasonable. Whereas a rifle, you can go, depending on the caliber, 1,000 yards.
I mean, 1,000 yards.
Distance, yeah.
So you go out, you're 16 years old.
Yes.
In your backyard, swamp.
Yep.
With a shotgun.
Correct.
Looking to kill a deer.
Pump, ready to go.
Pump, what time? Yeah.
Well, you go, so the best time to go is at the corners. So you go early in the morning, in the darkness. You'll walk out to a spot, which will be a place where you'll see sign, whether it's hoof prints or that there's a reason for the animal to go there, whether it's a crossing spot, a food source, or a trail that it likes to use. So you'll want to ambush it, basically. You're setting up an ambush. You'll want to wait for it to come by. When it comes by, you'll harvest it.
That's a euphemism for shooting
it. Shooting it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And some people will go and hunt all day long because, depending on the spot, they will travel through that area the whole day. Some spots are slack times where they don't really move through because after the mid-morning browse, they'll go and they'll bed down for a little while. And when it gets to the middle of the day, they might get up and move to their next spot, which is leading them to the evening feed, which leads them to their bedding area, which they'll go to sleep at.
And how do you learn that? I mean, could you like...
That took me a long time.
Can you find their itinerary?
Evolution.
Are they careless with their...
No, there's a lot of, what I found is doing a lot of reading.
Is that right?
I think it's like any hobby. If you're serious about it and you want to, I'm competitive.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways you take that competitive spirit and you want to do well at this sport, this activity, that it's a craft almost. So you read up on it and how are other people successful? How have they been able to intercept these animals? Because it's not as easy as it appears to be. Whether you have a rifle or a shotgun, there's certain intangibles that they possess that will foil you. I can only describe it as it's almost like magical, that there's a way that they can pick up your static electricity with your desire to kill something.
Mm-hmm.
They feel it in the air and they'll stop that in their tracks. They'll sense something's wrong.
Yeah.
When you get the same feeling of the hair on the back of your neck standing up, it happens to them and they'll leave.
Huh.
And they'll foil it.
Ah.
It's not that easy.
But when you were 16, you're going out in the back and
I was unsuccessful my first season.
I mean, it was pitch black. You're out there.
You stumble out in the dark. You find a good spot and you sit and you wait.
I imagine you sort of cased the spot previously.
Sure.
Yeah.
You'll do the preseason scouting.
Okay.
You'll look for sign, which is generally a heavily used trail. So you look for hoof prints or physically seeing them in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll look for a point where you can hide yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I didn't sit in trees, but sitting in trees is effective. Or you find something to obscure your form. And if you sit still enough, long enough, they'll pass in front of you and give you an opportunity to take them.
Just sitting still.
Sitting still.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So your entire first year, you didn't get a single kill.
No. I saw some, had some close calls, but I didn't.
You got your shot at them.
No.
You never shot at them.
No. Mm-hmm. I personally won't shoot unless it's I know I'm going to be able to kill them.
Really?
Yep. I was taught by many my friends' fathers that you only take one bullet in the woods and you come back either with it full or empty. There's no second shots, no redos. You
really? One bullet?
One shot, one kill. That was their philosophy. I went with more, but that was the that was the intent.
One just shot. Is that sort of the ethos of the?
I think so. I think a lot of people. You know, I think you don't want to. You don't want the animal to suffer. You want to do it as cleanly and quickly as possible.
Right.
You know, you want it to be instantaneous. Mm. And the first deer I shot, I was sitting close to an apple tree because I knew they fed there. And it was probably 10 yards away. And I knocked him right over. Boom. Dead on the spot. Lights out.
Through?
With a shotgun. Boom.
Where'd you shoot him?
The best spot is behind the shoulders where the heart and the lungs are.
Mm-hmm.
So the real vital organs of life are there, and you hit them there and you take them right out.
No headshots?
It's kind of a low percentage shot.
Is it?
Headshots, tricky. People shoot in the neck and the head. There's other spots to do it, but you know, the center mass is a really big area. Mm-hmm. You know, generally the kill zone is about the size of a dinner plate.
Is that right?
7, 8, 9 inches, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you hit in that area, generally, there's more effective areas within that zone. But if you hit in that zone, you will kill your deer and have it. And if it's not a good shot, you don't take it. And, you know, there's a whole, when you really want something bad and it's so close to you, there's the whole excitement of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have a good shot, you pass it up. But there's still the adrenaline rush, the rush of doing it happens. And there's some satisfaction in saying, well, I'm going out again, so I'll wait. Mm-hmm. Instead of trying to force a shot and, you know, wound me, which is the last thing you want to do.
Mm.
You don't really want to waste it.
So it's ironically very zen.
It is in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't think any hunter hates the animal they're hunting. I think in a lot of ways they really like them. They care about them. It's like a dichotomy. It's the thing you want really bad. You don't really want to kill it, but you have to. I think there's a joy in it, and there's also like a regret. Like, you feel bad that you had to kill it, but that's sort of the only way to do it.
Let's take a picture.
It's not the same, though. You don't get to eat the picture. You know? It won't sustain you over the winter.
So what was your first kill? Was it an apple tree? Is that what you said?
It was close to an apple
tree. Close to an apple tree, 10 yards away.
10 yards away, sitting
using a shotgun.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And then the fun part is dragging it home.
Okay.
Through the swamp.
How big is this?
It was probably like 150 pounds.
So you have this.
So okay, so you shoot it, it's on the ground.
It's on the ground.
So then now it's time to gut it. So then you turn it over and you open its stomach up and you.
Now do you go from the ribs down or from the anus up? What's the best way?
I usually like to start at the top. Everyone has their own technique and
their
special
right?
traditions. Everybody does all kinds of crazy stuff.
This is called field dressing.
Yes.
Is that right? For those of you who don't know, gutting a deer is known as field dressing.
The best thing you want to do is you want to... So if you work from the rear first, you'll cut the anus out completely from the deer.
Uh-huh.
And you'll make sure you hit
it's like a radical episiotomy.
Yes. Make sure you hit bone all the way around. You make a circle. Uh-huh. And then I like to start at the sternum and work my way up. Cut all the way to the bone.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there you can feel where the chest cavity ends and the stomach contents start. And there, uh-huh, you want to carefully cut down to its...
Why carefully?
Because you want to avoid hitting the stomach. Because if you hit the stomach, there's a potential you can ruin your meat, but as well the smell from all the enzymes that are cooking in the stomach are awful, and some people will throw up.
Really?
Yes. That is the worst fart you'll ever smell in the world. It is.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I know some
wicked
people.
I know, but this is wicked.
Is it? Yes. Wow. See, you have done this.
I have hit the stomach. Yes. Uh-huh. Oh, it's an unhappy time. So then, you know, once you open it up and you'll cut up the rib. Like, mm-hmm, I like to get the stomach kind of out if possible.
Okay.
And then you'll cut up the rib,
mm-hmm,
cage, open it up. And then I think it's the pericardium, the layer of skin and muscle that holds everything in your body. You'll, mm-hmm, remove that. And then you can cut out the trachea. And then you pull it out. And it all kind of rolls out.
Just one whole...
You kind of pull it all out, and it kind of comes out in a big pack. And then, since you've cut the anus, you, mm-hmm, can slowly pull the anus out of the animal.
Uh-huh.
And that generally leaves a nice, clean, empty cavity.
Wow.
And there'll be a lot of blood that, sure, you'll have to drain out of it. But other than that, it stays pretty clean.
Hmm.
And like I said, everybody has their own techniques and rituals and different things that they do. But that seems to work pretty consistently.
Mm-hmm. And with that method, you avoid cutting open the stomach as often?
Yes.
Yeah. When was the last time? I mean, have you gone years without accidentally slicing open the stomach? Or
no, it happens.
Is it just sometimes
this season, I nicked the stomach.
Yeah.
Yes. Wednesday. Oh. Past Wednesday.
Oh, wow. I thought I smelled something.
Yes.
Whew. Yeah.
It does cover you. It is a hot gas that comes out of there.
And then, so what do you do with the viscera then, once it's out?
Leave it for the coyotes.
Coyotes?
Or any other animals that'll come and eat it.
Is that right?
Yeah, they usually take care of it.
Mm.
And then, you know, the forest will reabsorb it, like, mm-hmm, the circle of life.
Do you take the head? You cut the head off? You leave the head on?
So, you have to leave the head on, okay, by law.
Why?
So that it can either be distinguished as a buck or a doe.
Well, who cares?
The state, because you have to have a license and tags. So, in order to take a buck, you need a buck tag, and to take a doe, you need a doe tag. So you have to have physical evidence that, you know, it is that animal.
So how much is it more expensive for a buck or a doe? And it's funny that both of those terms are like slang for money.
Well, there's a general license fee.
Okay.
And
how much does that run you?
You know, I don't know.
Like, for the massive slaughter that you do every year, like, well, how much is it per head?
Well, you know, it depends, because
per pound.
I usually get the turkey and fishing and deer hunting and all those other activities, so that...
Oh, you get, like, the whole package?
The Compass package is, like, $100.
$100? That's it?
That's it.
That's it for...
It's a lot.
Turkey...
It should be a lot less.
Turkey,
yeah.
Deer...
They should want to promote
fish.
People to do this. It should be a lot less.
Wow.
And there should be vouchers for people who are low income to let them shoot deer to feed themselves. I mean,
you think there should be vouchers for low income people
to
go hunt?
Absolutely. To feed themselves. It's a great, great activity.
Right. Well,
I mean, you learn, not only do you learn about a great craft of, mm-hmm, you know, feeding yourself, but, you know, when you're out in the woods waiting to deer hunt, you might spend 4, 6, 8, 12 hours sitting there watching what's going on around you.
Uh-huh.
It's incredible.
And not committing crimes.
Not at all.
Yeah.
The stuff you see
so,
is unbelievable.
How many deer do you need to keep you in meat for the year? Like, you said you got 2 deer, you said...
I would have to say...
You got about, you got 80 pounds.
You're allowed, four tags a season, and I'll fill my 4 tags, and that will get me through to the next season, so...
So over a couple hundred, almost a couple hundred pounds.
150 pounds.
150 pounds,
yeah,
of meat. And you'll eat that all year?
Yes.
I think once a week, twice a week?
Almost every day.
Eat deer almost
breakfast,
every day? Breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
Lunch and dinner, different
really?
Things, absolutely. Yes.
Do you ever cook it? You ever try cooking it?
All the time.
Yeah?
Yes, absolutely. It's delicious. I recommend it.
No, in terms of raw.
No, I don't like it tartar. No.
You don't like the deer tartar?
No.
Have you ever tried the deer tartar?
I have had a little bit.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I think it's delicious. You can do a lot of different things with it.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that the flavor of it is different depending on sort of the political affiliation of the deer?
I think it's interesting you mention that because the first deer I did get,
mm-hmm.
Independence. I cut it myself. I butchered it.
Oh.
And I thought I was doing a great job.
So you don't butcher them yourselves?
No.
Okay, but
there's a real, well, that takes skill and knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Okay. So you butchered it yourself. You thought you were doing a fine old job. Yeah.
And it was terrible.
Really?
It was all the stories about deer meat that you've heard about that it's terrible and gamey were true. Because I didn't know how to process it. So it tasted terrible, really.
What did you do wrong?
Evidently, there's a lot of different things that you can cut and not cut. But a lot of this, there's a layer of, it's kind of like a silvery sinew that if you leave it on, imparts a really heavy-duty, gamey taste. And that's probably the main thing that I did wrong, was not to remove that.
Mm.
But I guess there's other secretions and glands that you can cut across that you shouldn't. They're beautiful. It really does. I mean, it's great. Completely appetizing. You wouldn't even recognize that it was venison if you didn't know.
And how much does that cost you per pound, or do you mean to...
You know, the size of the deer, a smaller deer will be more expensive. Generally, the guy I take it to is $120 a deer.
$120 a deer. So $120 for a deer, let's say just ballpark, maybe it costs you $20 for the fee to do that.
Yeah.
What does a bullet cost you?
Depends on what you're using, but you know, it can be anywhere from $3 on up, depending on what you use.
Well, let's say you got a cheap bullet.
For instance, I like to shoot arrows. I like to archery hunt more than gun hunting.
Okay.
Archery is way better. Today, an arrow, to shoot a deer will cost you $30.
With an arrow?
With an arrow. The arrows I shoot in the broadheads, it's $30 a shot.
For an arrow?
For an arrow.
Can you recover them?
If you're lucky, yes. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes it's only a one-use operation.
So you shot a deer with an arrow?
Yes.
Nice.
Preferred method.
Is that right?
The first deer I shot was close.
Right.
Luck. But generally, it's a distance thing.
Right. You're at,
you know, 50 yards and over is when you shoot this deer. And it's very exciting. But when you start bow hunting and you learn about climbing into trees and really concealing yourself and the application of how to be more, I guess, covert because you worry about scent. You know, one of their main protections is smelling you.
Right.
So if they smell you, they won't even come near you.
Yeah. And do you cover yourself with sort of deer poo? Or?
No, I try to stay away from the deer poo.
Yeah.
There's all manner of cover scent and...
Do you use cover scents?
Sure. I like to use, there's a cover scent that smells like dirt. It's found everywhere, so it's not going to be a...
So you spray dirt on you?
It's kind of like, yes, it's a scent of dirt. It's called fresh earth.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fresh earth. That sounds a whole lot nicer than dirt.
Than dirt. Well, you know, truth is truth. It smells like dirt.
So you cover yourself with fresh earth.
Fresh earth.
Yeah.
In my camouflage.
You got your camo. Honestly, does camo really make a difference?
It really does.
Can deer...
Well, what it does is it breaks up your shape.
Mm-hmm.
They're used to seeing the pie face, you know, the pie plate face. But, you know, again, if you get in early enough and you sit still and they don't... It's all about the smell. If you're downwind of the deer,
mm-hmm.
and it can't smell you and you don't move, then it's not really going to perceive you're there unless... It somehow picks you up, but a lot of times if you just sit still,
mm-hmm.
and your outline, your shape is obstructed by other things in the, you know, sight plane, they're not going to pick you up. So, I mean, I think camouflage does work, and I think it also...
Do you paint your face?
No. But they have masks that you put on.
Oh, you wear a mask?
Yeah, is this where your eyes come through?
Really?
Yes. And sometimes I've even, you know, sometimes you close your eyes when they're coming, so that, because man, when you lock eye to eye, that's it, game's up. They see you.
Oh, really?
It's like, well, when you see someone and you perceive someone there, it's like a connection.
I don't know, sometimes I just look right through people.
Yeah, well, you know, that always happens. But the ones you don't look through.
Cupid, draw back your bow and let your arrow go straight to my lover's heart for me, for me. Cupid, please hear my cry and let your arrow fly straight to my lover's heart for me. Now, I don't mean to bother you, but I'm in distress. There's danger of me losing all of my happiness. For I love a girl who doesn't know I exist, and this you can fix. So, Cupid, draw back your bow and let your arrow go straight to my lover's heart for me. Nobody but me. Cupid, please hear my cry and let your arrow fly straight to my lover's heart for me. Now, Cupid, if your arrow make a love strong for me, I promise I will love her until eternity. I know between the two of us her heart we can steal. Help me if you will. So, Cupid, draw back your bow and let your arrow go straight to my lover's heart for me. Nobody but me. Cupid, please hear my cry and let your arrow fly straight to my lover's heart for me. Now, Cupid, don't you hear me calling you? I need you, Cupid, help me.
Okay, that was Sam Cooke.
Don't fail me.
That was Sam Cooke and telling about Cupid. And Cupid's no fool, as we've discovered with our discussions with Tiki Fernandez. That's the best shot, you know, the internal organs, that life center, the heart and the lungs. So we're going to continue with our conversation about hunting and whatnot with Tiki Fernandez. And here we go.
Yeah, you know, they're pretty impressive animals, you know, for all the modern technology you bring to bear. There's a low success rate a lot of times for all the time. You have to put in a lot of time to make it happen. And I feel like a lot of times they still have the upper hand. So with bow hunting, it's all close. It's between like 10 and 30 yards distance. Right. So, I mean, you can hear the deer breathing. I'm sure the deer, I've scared deer by breathing. They've heard me breathing. Yeah. So it's all very close and right on top. But the nice thing about bow hunting is that it's quiet. You just shoot the deer and there's not a really big disturbance in the forest.
Right.
You know, if there are other deer around, they're not scared or startled. Right. They're like, kind of what happened, or...
Right. Hey, I was just talking to him, and he's like sleeping.
And he ran off, and I don't know why he's laying down.
Yeah.
And so it's all... The squirrels are still chattering. Right. The birds are still, you know, talking to each other.
So do you ever get multiple shots off with bows?
Yes.
Are you not allowed?
You can if you're lucky enough.
Oh, okay. Why you smiled sort of a guilty smile when you said that.
It's just, you generally don't get a lot of opportunities to take multiple shots of different deer.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes they'll stand for you.
Right.
And you can shoot as many that will stand in your range and you have tags for it.
Right. So you shot the one with the arrow.
Yes.
It went down. The other one was confused.
And stood there. And allowed me to shoot that one.
So you shot two.
I shot three once.
You shot three.
Got the triple.
Wow.
Triple.
Kind of like Cabrera.
Filled my tags in one day.
Like Cabrera.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
A triple crown.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
So, and, you know, with archery, it goes like that a lot of times. They'll be in a group and they're not really sure what just went down.
Mm-hmm.
And you take advantage of it because it's not, like I said, it's not as easy as it appears to be.
It looks really simple to shoot a deer with an arrow.
It does, yep. But
it doesn't look simple at all.
There's some nuance to it. There's a little bit to it.
Nuance.
Yes.
Mm.
You know, and some people, you know, for me, it's a very exciting, your blood is pumping, and, you know, it's hard to stay steady. Because,
mm-hmm.
again, it's like something you want to have happen. And so you've waited an entire year for this season to come along, and you want to make a good shot. You want to do it in a very good way that you feel, but you know, good about, because you don't want to take a bad shot and wound the animal, because that's terrible. You live with that forever. You know, all the bad shots I made, I remember them as clearly as the good shots that I've made, where I've gotten a really nice animal.
Mm.
But it's terrible when you make a bad shot. You don't want to do that. You want to have a nice clean harvest and
right.
get them.
So talking with Tiki Hernandez about hunting. You've been hunting for how long? You started when you're 16, so...
I would say I became, I guess, a serious, dedicated hunter probably 15 years ago. I'm 40 now, so when I was around, you know, my mid-20s.
Mm-hmm. And for you, is it a solitary pursuit? Do you go out with a bunch of guys? I mean,
you know, deer hunting is really solitary. You can start maybe going to your general location with people,
mm-hmm.
but... it's really not a group activity.
Hmm.
The recovery, if you have to haul it out of the woods, is a group activity. The processing of it can be a group activity, but the scouting, but the actual hunting generally is one person.
Hmm. And so, certainly a lot has changed in this area in the last, you know, 20 years. Has hunting changed? Has either the geography or the technology changed much? You said you do a lot of bow hunting. I imagine it's, you know, that's...
The technology has changed incredibly. It's probably on parallel with communications, how that's gone from the rotary phone to mobile phones. I mean, the technology for archery has really increased.
Really?
Just dramatically. They're just materials, and the compound bow that you use now probably has no resemblance to what it looked like maybe 15 years ago.
Really?
Yes. And sights and rests and all the different implements that go onto the bow are just a lot more refined. And, you know, in some ways, It's another weird kind of situation, because now people are getting back into using recurve bows, which is an older technique of just, it's more of a sight feel shooting, where you kind of bring it up and you shoot quickly. Whereas I feel like with a compound bow, you can draw, you have this enormous weight that, because of the cams and all the different mechanisms that allow the bow to be open, and the weight is reduced to a certain level so that you can aim and hold it longer and then shoot when you feel that you have better aim, whereas the other one is more instinctual and you kind of shoot very quickly, and it's more intuitive nature to hunting. So it's kind of an unusual mix of intuition and this modern technology sort of mixed together.
Hmm. And how about with sort of rifles and shotguns?
I think the implements are similar,
mm-hmm.
but there's different technologies of scopes where sight estimations are sometimes built into the scope where you have different, they're called holdover points.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're sighted in at 100 yards, there's a bunch of these little bubbles underneath the 100-yard mark that are successive increments that go out to further distances. So instead of kind of having to make a kind of a scientific wild guess at how high you have to hold over the animal to make the shot, you have this bubble that's already pre-sighted in by you that works from sighting it in at the original 100-yard mark.
Hmm.
And it sort of has kind of simplified it, made it easier.
Hmm.
And, you know, bullet technology, there's different bullets, all kinds of fancy projectiles that fly better and longer, flatter.
Is there more open space or less open space for hunting? How does that work? I mean, do you go on private lands, public lands?
To me, I've never had a lot of land to hunt. Some people are lucky and they have large farms and large tracts of land to hunt, which is nice. It's sort of like it's a great benefit to have so much room to hunt on. I feel like now with so much more development and housing, everything's sort of getting cramped together,
mm-hmm.
especially in like Dutchess County. That's why there's limitations on the firearms that you can use. You can only use a shotgun because of the distance factor. So the deer have kind of adapted to live in these small parceled areas of quasi woods between houses. And some of the biggest, like, bucks, and that's sort of the paramount. You like to shoot a mature buck with big rack and something to look at. That's what you want
to... Something to look at, or...?
From the bragging point to the difficulty of it, it's extremely difficult to shoot a mature deer because it's lived successively through all these years of being shot at.
Right.
So it's gained a lot of knowledge of how to live through the season and what to do. And honestly, the only way you really shoot one is because it makes a mistake. When it's a breeding cycle, it's your biggest chance to have it make that mistake. And generally, you don't get a second opportunity to shoot a big deer. Like, if you miss it or it winds you, which is it smells you mm-hmm. when you're hunting, it generally won't come back to that area.
Really?
And a lot of times, they'll only come out at night.
Hmm.
And during the day, they're just hidden somewhere. And you can walk by them within a few feet, and they won't move.
Hmm.
Because they know that they haven't been spotted. And they just hang low.
Hmm.
And it's just... It's very difficult to get a hold of one, and there's not a lot of them because a lot of the deer are harvested small and young. And you know, right now in New York, they're having antler restrictions where they want to get a larger, more mature deer to shoot during the season,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a great thing. I think the gun season in New York is way too long. It should be...
You think it's too long?
Way too long, sure. And a lot of the states that get... You know, because honestly, you want to shoot a big deer. And the only way you have big deer is not to have a lot of gun hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the states where there are big deer...
So you actually think it's under-regulated?
Not so much that it's under-regulated. I don't think it's managed efficiently for the process of shooting deer. It shouldn't be... You know, there's the old slogan, if it's brown, it's down, which is basically shoot any deer in the woods.
Right.
You know, and I don't know, that's not really hunting. That kind of takes the whole craft out of it, because it's kind of like this thing that you, over years of successive years of doing it, you learn techniques to sort of increase your opportunity to shoot one.
Mm.
And there's occasionally, you know, just like everything, luck happens, and luck is a big component in hunting. You know, like, you can set up all your opportunities to increase your luck, but a lot of times it's just luck.
Mm.
Like, it just happened to come by at the time where you were there.
Have the kinds of people that hunt changed? Are there less people hunting now, more people hunting? Do you get people coming up from the city more?
I think there's a diversity of people who hunt. it seems, I don't know, you know, just from reading different literature, there are more women involved in hunting. I think it ebbs and flows. I think, you know, I think the economy does play a role in when people hunt and when they don't hunt. You know, I think, you know, having a big hunk of meat that didn't cost you too much to have is attractive to a lot of different people. They say generally that there are less hunters every year doing it. You know,
and more deer.
And more deer, yeah.
Because there are
quite a few deer.
Less predation. A friend of mine actually was mentioned recently, and it occurred to me, and you've lived abroad, and there's a remarkable lack of roadkill in Europe.
Or even species to hunt, really. Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a fair amount of animals, and they say that there's more open space than there has been in the past, that a lot more...
Probably more forest.
Yeah, there's more forest
cover. Because there's 80%
I think of New York State is now forested, where before it was the opposite. There was like 20% or less forested, and now it sort of switched because, yeah, there's less farming. There's more housing. But, you know, I think part of, you know, hunting is an appreciation for the open space because, you know, you spend a lot of time sitting there waiting for this animal to come across, but, you know, life goes on and there's so many other things that happen in front of you. You generally wouldn't see a bobcat or fisher cats or any of these other predators that are around that live here without being out there for a bunch of hours, and you kind of understand how really dynamic the area that we live in. And it's just...
You've seen some bobcats and...
Yes, I've seen a lot of great, great wildlife. You know, I've seen hawks come in and eat songbirds. I've seen groups, you know, a mating pair of Cooper's hawks work a cedar patch, flying in and out of it, one high, one low, trying to kick out a bird, and eventually they kicked out a blue jay, and they killed it and ate it.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't really see that on your hike through the woods or even the casual sitting of the woods because they see you coming.
Mm.
Unless you become a fixture of the forest and you're just sitting there still, just observing, you don't really pick up on all that stuff.
Mm.
And I mean, I guess you could just go sit in the woods for 8 hours and just be still and sort of be like a wildlife biologist. Again, you're just not feeding yourself.
You're not feeding yourself. Well, you're not feeding your
sure,
belly.
Right.
You're not feeding your belly. So you've seen some bobcats. Fisher cats? What's a fisher cat?
It's sort of like an eastern wolverine. You know, they're a predator, fur bearer. People trap them for their fur.
Mm-hmm.
But they're sort of a decent sized predator, and they're not common. They don't like to be seen by people. And you know, I saw again a pair of them working a patch of woods looking to kick something up to feed, and it was just really interesting just to see how they worked and what they were doing in order to, you know, try to harvest something, like working in tandem to get some food. It was just really interesting. You can read these things in books, but unless you see it, you don't really understand and appreciate. And it's nice to have them around.
And foxes and...
Sure.
And coyotes, really?
Yeah, there's lots of coyotes. That's probably the most dangerous thing about deer hunting is occasionally... I haven't experienced myself, but I've heard people have had bad experiences in the woods with coyotes in the dark hours.
I hear one now.
Could be. Yeah, you know, they'll be walking in the woods and they'll kind of come around you and they growl at you. And it's
really
a little unnerving to be kind of...
Was there a pack of them or...?
Sure. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they go in groups.
Now, are those native to the area? Were they introduced?
Yeah, they're eastern coyotes.
Eastern coyotes? I always thought they were like a western sort of
thing.
Well,
I'm not exactly sure the genesis of how they got here, but they're now a species that lives here and they're, you know... They're another decent-sized predator that lives in the woods and eat everything from your dog and cat to deer.
Mm. And they'll take down a deer?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. At work, I saw 3 coyotes push a deer into a fence. And the deer was so scared it didn't realize it could either go under or over the fence. And that's how they got it.
Clever.
Very clever. And they were efficient. They knocked it down, they ate it within 40 minutes, and then they left.
Was a cowboy I knew in South Texas. His face was burnt deep by the sun. Part history, part sage, part Mexican. He was there when Pancho Villa was young. And he'd tell you a tale of the old days, when the country was wild all around. Sit out under the stars of the Milky Way and listen while the coyotes howl. And they go, woo-yip, woo-yip, woo. Hoodaloo-yip, woo-yip, woo-yip, woo. Hoodaloo-yip, woo. Now the longhorns are gone, and the drovers are gone, the Comanches are gone, and the outlaws are gone. Geronimo's gone, and Sam Bass is gone, and the lion is gone, and the red wolf is gone. Well, he cursed all the roads and the old men, and he cursed the automobile. Said this is no place for an hombre like I am, in this new world of asphalt and steel. Then he'd look off someplace in the distance at something only he could see. He'd say all that's left now of the old days, damned old coyotes and me. And they go, ooh-yip, ooh-yip, ooh. Ooh-yip, ooh-yip, ooh. Ooh-yip, ooh-yip, ooh. Ooh-yip, ooh-yip, ooh. Now the longhorns are gone, and the drovers are gone, the Comanches are gone, the outlaws are gone. Now Quantro's gone, Stanwante's gone, and the lion is gone, and the red wolf is gone. One morning they searched his adobe. He disappeared without even a word. But that night as the moon crossed the mountain, one more coyote was heard. And he'd go, ooh-yip, ooh-yip, ooh. Ooh-yip, ooh-yip, ooh. Ooh-yip.
That was Don Edwards with Coyotes, and you're listening to Foraging Ahead. I'm Kevin Factor, and I'm talking with Tiki Fernandez about hunting. And
isn't it always the case when you have a pursuit or something that you enjoy doing, that when you're focused on that, so many other things happen? Like, you notice other things,
or in order to open yourself to the opportunity.
You open yourself up. I mean, I'm not really a hunter. I mean, I have no qualms about killing things. I just don't do it because I'm afraid I would like it too much. and not be able to stop. But I know when I'm out in the, looking for mushrooms, I've learned more about trees and mosses and sort of undergrowth and things like that.
Sure.
Just because I want free food.
Sure.
And if I have this knowledge, it allows me to
be really more open. If you think about it, it's sort of the same concept, because you're really, so you study this animal and you want to understand its foraging habits and its techniques and what it does and what it likes to eat, and that sort of expands your knowledge base to particular species of plants and trees, and you know, like it may prefer this acorn from this tree first, as opposed, you know, say it prefers white acorns, which it'll go to a white oak and eat those acorns before it goes to the red oak. For whatever reason, it has a better flavor, or they drop sooner, or so you pick up all these different clues about really your whole world around you. I know there's different areas have different sized deer, and depending on the area, they can over-browse everything. You'll see the browse line, and that'll force them to eat different things, and you know, probably push them more to grass species, which may not have enough protein, you know, to put weight on them. There's different impacts. Just like with people, now there's less corn, so it's causing all these ripple effects throughout.
Surely, this is the great bacon shortage of 2012, but you don't have to worry about that.
Everybody loves bacon, come on.
Well, it's a few days before the election, and as an outdoorsman, as a hunter, you know, generally... you know, your demographic is associated with the Republican Party. Do you feel like there is enough gun regulation, too much gun regulation, or not enough gun regulation?
Honestly, I feel there's an adequate amount of gun regulation. For me to get a weapon, I have my handgun permit, and I had to go through a pretty decent process and wait for it to come. I had to fill out paperwork. I had to get 4 references who would, you know, stand up, say I'm not mentally ill, and I would be responsible.
That must have been hard.
It was. I had to pay a lot of money. But, you know, you have to go through a process, and I feel like...
You didn't feel resentful, or...?
No, I have no problem. I am not a criminal.
Right.
So... check all you want. I have nothing to hide. Mm-hmm. Other than, you know, I want to shoot, so if I have to go through this process, then I have to go through this process. And, you know, recreational shooting is fun. There's nothing wrong with it. It's great to go and shoot at cans, paper, whatever you want, whatever enjoyment you get out of it. It's a pretty healthy activity. There's nothing wrong with going and shooting at all, I feel like. And the whole gun rights issue is a little bit clouded for me, because there are plenty of rules on the books that, if enforced, are adequate. There are background checks that you have to go through to get a handgun. You have to get your permit, and once you get your permit, you can buy a handgun, which entails going to a store, you buy it, then you have to wait to get the paperwork back, which entails getting the receipt from the dealer that you bought it, taking it to the governing authority, handing it in, filling out paperwork there, and then waiting up to a few months to get your license.
And by then you probably calm down.
And they can still deny it.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, murder or bank robbery are shot.
Right.
But, you know, and with a long gun, it's a little less time because they do an instant background check now, but... they can also deny you on the spot. And if they deny you, that's it. You're not going to get another long gun.
So you don't feel like Obama wants to take your gun away?
You know, I can see both sides of it. I think that they're doing things to make it harder to have guns for legal citizens. You know, there's all different mechanisms that they're using. They're making bullet components. People who like to make their own bullets, more expensive and less accessible to do that. Which is a way, a backdoor way of, you know, cutting down people's access to, you know, having guns. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the government and the criminals are always going to have weapons. Always. That's just going to be a fact of life. There's no way to get rid of them. And to try to take them away from me, who has no malice or malintent.
But do you feel like they're trying to take them away from you?
Sure.
Really?
Absolutely. Yep.
I mean, even for hunting purposes? And
I hear, you know, you hear different things, and, you know, it's speculation until they do it, but sure, they want to reduce, you know, your access to certain weapons. People don't want you to be able to have them. They want sort of like the English model where, you know, you have to join a club and have your weapons stored at the club, which I don't know how many people can afford to join an exclusive club to hunt.
I always will remember 'twas a year ago November. I went out to hunt some deer on a morning bright and clear. I went and shot the maximum the game laws would allow. 2 game wardens, 7 hunters, and a cow. I was in no mood to trifle. I took down my trusty rifle and went out to stalk my prey. What a haul I made that day. I tied them to my fender and I drove them home somehow. 2 game wardens, 7 hunters, and a cow. The law was very firm. It took away my permit, the worst punishment I ever endured. It turned out there was a reason. Cows were out of season and one of the hunters wasn't insured. People ask me how I do it, and I say there's nothing to it. You just stand there looking cute, and when something moves, you shoot. And there's 10 stuffed heads in my trophy room right now. 2 game wardens, 7 hunters, and a cow. Yes, the law was very firm. It took away my permit, the worst punishment I ever endured. It turned out there was a reason. Cows were out of season, and one of the hunters wasn't insured. People ask me how I do it, and I say there's nothing to it. You just stand there looking cute, and when something moves, you shoot. And there's 10 stuffed heads in my trophy room right now. 2 game wardens, 7 hunters, and a purebred Guernsey cow.
All right, that was Tom Lehrer with the last word on hunting today. And I'd like to thank Tiki Fernandez for discussing honestly his thoughts on hunting, gun control. We had a whole other conversation, which is a whole other show. And maybe we'll air some of that, and or maybe even have a sort of a roundtable discussion on assault weapons and handguns and all that. Though it is hard to argue that hunting is a contemplative pursuit if done thoughtfully and correctly. And for those of you who enjoy venison, it is a healthy alternative to beef. Okay, and that's the end of Foraging Ahead for today. And watch out for deer ticks. They are out big time right now. Watch out for hunters. They don't shoot like Tom Lehrer says they shoot. And enjoy the fall and a happy Halloween, everybody.
WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra.
Bet you're going fishing all of the time. Baby going fishing too.
The New York State Bureau of Fisheries is now offering a new full-color map and brochure, free of charge, for individuals who fish in the fresh waters of the Empire State. Providing information on over 400 lakes, ponds, rivers, and streams, the iFish New York Guide to Freshwater Fishing in New York State also offers guidance on fishing licenses, boat registration, and camping reservations, as well as color photos and descriptions of popular New York sport fish, all in a handy 4x9-inch format. The map is available at any Department of Environmental Conservation office or by mail. Requests by email should be sent to fwfish@gw.dec.state.ny.us with fishing map in the subject line.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
Welcome to Imprint, the program that tunes into local and regional music from upstate New York and independent music from points beyond. I'm your host, Terry Doyle. On this week's episode, it's the 2012 Halloween edition, Trick or Treat. Let's start off with a trick. Well, you know, different things during the course of this program will be a trick or a treat as we go through the past year, kind of. Well, here is Greg Klima and Amy Kucherek with the song Creepy Dead Bug. I guess that would be a trick right here on the Imprint program.
What's that floating in the swimming pool? Creepy dead bug, creepy dead bug. Can't wait to show it to the kids at school. Creepy dead bug. Dead bug. I wonder how long it's been floating around. I bet it went in for a swim and then it drowned. Creepy dead bug. Creepy dead bug. Creepy dead bug. Creepy dead bug. It's got six hairy legs, two compound eyes. Creepy dead bug. Creepy dead bug. I've never seen a thorax quite that size. Creepy dead bug. Dead bug. It's a little bit black and a little bit green. Got a broken antenna and it's missing a wing. Creepy dead bug. Creepy dead bug. Creepy dead bug. Creepy dead bug. I ran into the house all soaking wet. My dad said, what you got there in that net? Creepy dead bug, creepy dead bug, creepy dead bug. So I put it in a jar and I took it to school. Creepy dead bug, creepy dead bug.